David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 362. I'm your symbiote host, Steve Raker, lured down into the comic book bunker by a moloid, where I've come to grow comfortable. From here, I can build. Marvel Noise is the podcast proudly sponsored by nobody. You can find, stream, or download new and old episodes on marvelnoise.com. with new episodes and cover galleries posted on our Facebook and Twitter pages. You can find other fine shows like Marvel Noise at our host, the Deliberate Noise Network, such as our sister show, Indie Comic Book Noise, where WWX Kevin, Andrew the LA Rabbit, Phil, and sometimes I talk about the indie books we're reading. Speaking of Kevin and Andrew, they'll join me in a few minutes. But before I have to share the mic with them, I'll quickly tell you that I recently read Captain Marvel number 25, the current series. I keep picking this book up, even though it's been hit or miss for me. The current creative team of Kelly Thompson and Lee Garbett is a good one. This issue, they're joined by Baleen Ortega, who illustrates several flashback pages. The current storyline is, well, it's not my favorite premise. Cap is pulled off course while she's on a mission and ends up 30 years into the future. And, you know, it's a disaster, of course, of dystopian proportions. In true what-if or Exiles fashion, this future is ruled by the tyrant son of Namor and the Enchantress. And Carol gets captured and will probably have to clean house with this turkey before all is said and done. The art is so nice, though, I have to keep reading. I also read the 6-issue Punisher Soviet limited series from the end of 2019 and the first third of 2020, written by Punisher laureate Garth Ennis, with art by Jason Burroughs and Guillermo Ortega. This was, as would be expected, an enjoyable, meaty read. The Punisher is taking down some Russian crime operation and gets wind that he's been given credit for actions taken against this cartel that have occurred all over the globe. He finally meets the dude behind it, who's a Russian guy also after this crime lord, but due to an old score from the war. So the Punisher and this guy end up working together, combining forces... I dare say even become friends. It's a hell of a ride, and the art is plenty good. You should check it out, although I don't think any of the Max titles are on the Marvel Unlimited digital service, and this is definitely a Max title. Lots of bullets through heads. Also, I just read the recent Chris Claremont anniversary special. This one-shot written by Chris Claremont. Hey, who better to celebrate Chris Claremont than Chris Claremont? This ish has art by the likes of Bill Sienkiewicz, Brett Booth, and Sean Chen, and tells a story centered around original New Mutant Danny Moonstar, one of Claremont's favorites, especially in her role with the Valkyries, which this plays off of. And the story weaves through Marvel history with twists on some of Claremont's past scenes or moments like Rogue besting and absorbing Ms. Marvel and Valeria's appearance in his run on Fantastic Four and Kid Storm meeting Gambit for the first time. It's kind of weird, it's kind of fun, but the art was good. So take a look when it's up on Marvel Unlimited. All right, without further ado, here comes Kevin and Andrew. Hey guys, what's going on?
Hey, Super Steve, how are you doing?
All right, I'm glad we're Getting a chance to dive into some recent reads here, see what you guys been up to, and maybe take a trip back to the Bronze Age like I force us to do every episode these days.
Yeah, do you have a name for this? Like, well, I know it is usually the Bronze Age binge, but like it'll be some kind of time machine taking Doctor Doom's time platform, or
I think Bronze Age beauties, because they've all been successes.
I like that we've been trying to, I don't know, give ourselves little feature names, right? If we talk about a Silver Age or older book, we've been calling it a fantasy masterpiece, and a Bronze Age binge, and a Marvel Tales when we do a, you know, deep dive on a book and go page by page. I mean, that goes way back to the before we were hosting the show, when David would read through the Hulk and do his rars and stuff. Or even Chris Chavez. Equinox used to do Marvel Tales too, and go into books that he read. You know, when I was thinking, though, when we get into books that are more modern age, you know, like, when did the Bronze Age end for Marvel in your mind? I mean, was it Byrne's departure to DC, or like Secret Wars, or Secret Wars 2? I mean, that's when I got out of comics. Was it Venom appearing in Amazing Spider-Man 300, or some say the return of Jean Grey in X-Factor was the end of the Bronze Age for Marvel, or the Punisher number one? What do you think?
I mean, 86 would be a good point in that it totally, like, that's the year that of the, like, the massive, I always think of that as one of the massive years in comics. It's like,
wait, we're talking about
1993
Showcase number 4, the Flash. For the, oh wait. I like the idea of the what they call the Copper Age as that middle. So I put the Bronze Age ending earlier and then call some of that stuff the Copper Age. But I know that's not always accepted everywhere. I just feel there's kind of the Bronze Age kookiness that we all love. I feel sort of shooter stamped it out.
That's what I was going to say. When do you
relentless efficiency and, you know, no more writers being their own editors and all that stuff, I think merits it. Now, what you want to hang your hat on, Secret Wars 1 or whatever, I don't really care, but I view that because I like the kind of goofy Bronze Age silliness. Also, it just matches up with my reading comprehension. I have a bunch of 70s comics, but I was a confused little kid, so I really started buying into understanding the world and all that more in the 80s. Like, the 70s, they were just, ooh, look, it's Spider-Man on a comic, whether it was a What If or an electric company or whatever, I didn't really care. And then I started getting more. So I would put it, you know, early 80s into the Copper Age for a while, and then modern comics maybe at the spring of, I don't know, somewhere around the Clone War, like Image leaving.
I see it as I'm closer to the Kevin camp of that 86. By 86, I think the tide had turned. Yeah. It was even, I mean, and it's selfishly because I left comics in 85 and, or in the beginning 86 maybe, and the reasons why were, I view as the end of the Bronze Age. I mean, if you look at all comics together, you got to tie it to, like, Crisis, right? In over at DC was ending, yeah, there. That's pretty obvious where things ended there. But along with Crisis happening was Perez going off of the art chores on New Teen Titans, which he wouldn't come back. So that was a, you know, that book wasn't the same anymore. And, you know, I've said it before, like, Miller and Jansen were off of Daredevil by that time. Byrne was doing some really weird inking on Fantastic Four that was a big visual shift, and he would very soon turn the inking chores over to Al Gordon. Thor, Simonson wasn't doing the art anymore, and brought Sal Buscema on. Marvel Team-Up had ended. All of the direct market-only books had ended. Micronauts, Moon Knight, Kazar, Defenders was about to end. Ghost Rider had ended. Power Man and Iron Fist had ended. Shang-Chi had ended. Cap and the Skull had their weird anticlimactic old man battle in Cap 300 and the weird editorial writing thing that happened. So Dematteis was off of Cap and the book was really weird for a few months there, and Zek was gone. So it was like the weird Paul Neary stuff.
I still love that old man battle, though. That is one of the most famous old man.
I dug it too. And the Alpha Flight and Hulk were about to switch creative teams. The Rhodey era of wearing the armor was over, and Stane was defeated in Iron Man 300, I want to say. And Stern's run on Doctor Strange was over, and they ended Doctor Strange's book. I mean, a lot of stuff that was the Bronze Age to me all came to a screeching halt by the time 85 was over. And the Secret Wars 2, I felt, was such an obvious everything that we don't like about intertitle crossovers that have happened since. I feel like they were really laid out the paradigm for it there. Secret Wars 2, just 6 months after Secret Wars, and then like involving every title, and it was a I was gone by the third issue. I was like, I'm done with comics. So that would be what I would say that around that time too.
That's only scratching surface of some comics.
I still like the Copper Age. Stand by my defense that I feel like the comics of the early 80s feel like a big shift from those late 70s books. There was some kind of movement towards, I don't know what it was. Maybe it was the repeating their powers at the start of every book or whatever. But it felt like there was that era, I guess the shooter era, that had a very distinctive feel and then kind of phased out. Like I said, around about, I don't know, when the Image guys left, I pick as a point. It doesn't have to be. They would already influenced everything to such an extreme degree.
That's the thing. Once the Image guys start coming in, things start changing a lot.
Yeah, or some people even say that Image Exodus was the end of the Bronze Age. I mean, if they want to drag it out, but yeah,
I don't know. I don't know that I would include all their Marvel stuff as like, I gotta lump that in with the Image stuff because it's still them. They're still like, they're the guys that are running the show and everything. So it seems weird to have them run everything and then just like running everything just at a different company. It's like, it's the same feeling.
Well, since the Bronze Age began when I was born, it should end when I stopped reading comics.
No. All right, that's an argument I can get, but now I'm
enough said.
But it, even after that, like if you're gonna go to another age, like the 90s is even segmented between the first half and the second half.
Sure. For sure. And even look at the editor-in-chief change is enough to, you know what I mean? I think the end of DeFalco's time as editor-in-chief ended that time. Everything was different when Harris took over and he had that corporate subdivision, subdividing everything up, and that was weird. It felt like corporate comics.
Yeah. Like, I think things are more consistent the decades that come after the 90s than the 90s themselves.
Well, a book that I read recently and enjoyed was X-Force number 15. No, X-Force number 16, entitled Into the Deep, written by Benjamin Percy with art by Joshua Cassara, who I was not familiar with. Although he might have done art on this book already, but it's such good art.
Since the beginning, since the first issue, that if we were going to have, like, and even Marvel recognizes with their rebranded Marvel Young Guns, like, he's an artist on the rise, no doubt.
No question about it. I mean, that's one of the problems with the way that the Hickman X books are, is because they all read in a reading order that doesn't have you reading two consecutive issues of a title, you know what I mean, in a row, it's hard for me to get a sense of, like, who's on what title and who's drawing what and how long is each. Like, there's no sense of what title is what title to me, except for, like, I know the pirates are kind of, they do the pirate thing in the one issue, the one title. But Kassera's awesome in this issue from the design. The deal is the island of Krakoa is infected. Like, there's a specimen that is collected from one of the infected victims. And, I mean, the specimen leaps right out of the petri dish and right through the microscope lens to attack the beast. It's a hostile little critter. Reminded me of, like, the John Carpenter, The Thing stuff where they're poking around the petri dish and the thing's, like, jumping out at people. So, because Krakoa is so weird above ground, we've never thought about what it's doing under the water just off its shores and how it's affecting marine life and what the dirty underbelly of Krakoa is. So Wolverine, Forge, and Quentin, just call him Kid Omega, they don this cool underwater gear that Kassera designs and go into the deep trench and fight mutations. And it's a great little adventure. And we even get a fairly tolerable appearance by the Submariner, which is cool.
Is he still not evil? Is he still in a mood?
He was in a mood that was more within the normal limits of his character. You know, he wasn't nice.
Blaming them for some environmental.
He was haughty. He was haughty. He was like, you know, Krakoa, you're wrecking the above ground with Krakoa. You're not going to wreck the underwater thing. If this takes all day, I'm going to be pissed. But he does help out. But Percy handles the setup and then, like, the banter between Quire, Logan, and Forge really good. And, like we said, the art is really more than adequate. It's really good. And the designs of the infected people and the infected itself and the underwater diving suits and stuff, it's a nice, tight issue. Nice done in one.
You know what I've been noticing? I think it might have been the coolometer when I said, oh, we did that whole thing, and I thought, oh, what if I did an artist coolometer? And I wasn't thinking the bottom of the coolometer. Like I didn't want
to
go. Well,
I'm glad you didn't jump right to the worst of this.
Like that would be kind of depressing because we've all been through that, and like looking through a lot of recent Marvel books, I'm like, man, this is a good stable. Like, I don't know if it was what it was, but recently I've been really taking notice of Marvel artists,
and not necessarily names that I'm really familiar with or could connect to past work or indie work even. It's just there's all these names that I'm learning.
Yeah, it's good. It feels like
I don't know where they're coming from.
I don't know if there's been a turnover or what, but it you know, people cycle in and out.
Well, wasn't that CB's big thing? He was good at finding artists.
Yeah.
But that was supposed to be one of his strengths. So I presume they have a bunch of people just check in Instagram and Twitter and Twitch and everywhere and seeing people post stuff. I would be.
I don't know when I should do this massive binge. I feel like it's all connected.
Every comic is connected, Kevin. It's all one universe.
That wasn't supposed to be like a Marvel movie riff. It's all connected. But I've been the king of reads. Does that sound good?
Sure, why not?
Although I guess it's not. I'm not really wearing black. Maybe it's dark navy. So I'm not exactly the king in black.
You're the Kevin in black.
Maybe that works. So I have a Thunderbolts, of course, a Guardians of the Galaxy, a Gwenom versus Carnage. And an Immortal Hulk.
So what's the name of this event then, Kevin?
King in Black.
I'm going to be diving into that when we hang up the phone on this podcast. So I'm looking forward to it. Get me excited.
I mean, I won't super spoil the first issue. Like, I was more into...
You can do whatever. Sometimes I need a good spoiler to light the fire under me to break the inertia.
I just mean that the tie-ins is what I was... I definitely read more of the tie-ins, obviously, because there's... I think I picked well. That's what I mean. Like, was it Empire? I didn't have so many things. And then this, I'm like, this seems like it's going to be rocking out with some of these books. Because I think I think it's heavier that I'm buying for this than Absolute Carnage, which is interesting. Because I would say there's not... Like, there's so much connective tissue that if you bought that, you're probably buying this. But for me, not the case. So I'll just give you a brief thing of the King in Black thing. You think they would have been better prepared? That's what my first thought was. Like, they have a good defense to Null coming to Earth and everything. But you think they would have been like they had prep time, right?
I certainly a certain hero. We as readers certainly did.
Across the street. I don't know. Black Panther had an off day, right? He didn't have that book in his drawer. If Null's coming to Earth, this is what you do. This is how you evacuate the planet or whatever. Obviously, he didn't have that book. I'm also thinking of, like, remember all the crazy stuff in Hickman's Avengers where they're like, oh, well, we'll just put some kind of shield around the sun or our solar generator, or like all these... Wild, I don't know. Maybe they've been pretty busy in Avengers, anyways. Like Moon Knight's collecting all the moons in the universe. Like obviously, they needed to rest in the hot tub for a few minutes in between some of those things.
Yeah, Tony's changing diapers. He doesn't have time to think about putting a web net around the Earth anymore. I mean, honestly, that's a kind of one of the big differences between. A sophisticated kind of a run Love Hickman's where he really is like, you know, what's the potential of these guys versus the, you know, what story am I going to tell?
Yeah.
So, wait, did they draft the Sentry? Because, you know,
Spoilers! I was going to get that.
Null and Void. I mean, come on.
Hey, didn't Carnage rip the Sentry apart or something? Or no, the Sentry ripped Carnage apart, right? So Carnage wouldn't like that.
Oh.
Yeah, I think one of these has a reference to that. And because of, you know, if you have, like, the electricity powers, like Living Nightwing, you're gonna be showing up here for a cameo appearance. And then, of course, some of the mutants have to show up and everything and be like, hey, We might not be the greatest guys in the world and pushing everyone around with their drug habit, but we'll help out. But things do not go well. Shocking, I know. Things do not go well. A lot of dragons, a lot of action.
Things can't go well in the first act, you know?
I mean, yeah. I mean, I'll leave it at that. What I really want to get into is all the tie-ins. So
the important part of any event,
obviously. Well, the only thing is, some of the tie-ins I usually rate higher than the actual event. Like, right. I wasn't a big Secret Invasion fan, but when you got into some of those books along the way, I'm like, those were. You had Black Panther doing his thing. You had Avengers Initiative doing the thing.
It's the tie-ins where there's a chance to tell a story.
Yes, this is true. This is true. Unless someone's really, really pulling in a lot of good stuff into the main book. You usually get some good solo one-off things. Now, I didn't know this at the time, but the Immortal Hulk, if you were looking for a Christmas story to do for the podcast, we could have done this issue. I didn't read the solicit, so I don't know how much was hinted at, but this is... It was... The Night Before Christmas.
Santa Hulk.
Well, this is kind of weird because this fits right in, since it's Ewing, this fits right in with what's going on in the Immortal Hulk. So he's a little skinny. So I don't know, maybe you could read this and be like, I want to know what's up with that, and then you can go check in on the Immortal Hulk, I guess. And then this is probably, I mean, sometimes I've been into, but I would say not as high as the other artists on the book. This is Cooter, who did the Dugan's Guardians of the Galaxy. That's what I remember him from. I'm like, good, but not, I don't know, something about it I can't quite. Is this some, I guess it's a bit of the, maybe a bit of a Frank Whiteley vibe there that's throwing me off sometimes. Or like a Burnham or something. I don't know, something about it, I'm like enjoying it, but there's always that, there's just something weird about the characters. I don't know, like they're a little squishy or something. But also, this is a silent issue. How often do you see a silent, like, you might see a silent issue, but not quite. Like, I remember, like, there was that X-Men one-shot. But that was trying to do, like, the Morrison Quietly
yep.
type of deal, where they had the silent month. Like, this is just, like, out of the blue, as far as I know, Christmas silent issue. And I'm like, Marvel fanfare? Like, like I'm trying to pull at the threads of where you could have potentially saw something like, or think, or been inspired by, right? So the Hulk at Christmas, he runs across Null. He gets shot up by the cops. There's a Christmas present. So this is where and then, of course, there's a store, Mantlo's. Naturally. And then even if you read that, the reprint, an Immortal Hulk reprint with his father, like there's a little flashback thing here. But I think this is where, like, if you're really into the artists are important to comics. Who knew, right? You got to be totally, I think for a silent, you got to be totally into the artist. So I think maybe if it was someone else, I would have been like, oh yeah, it was a silent. Like, I didn't run the watch, but some enjoyment is lost, I would say, with the choice of, because it's totally up to. If you're digging the artist, if you're doing a silent issue, totally up to that.
Plus, Joe Caramagna lost a paycheck.
Yeah, I guess he only had to do the Night Before Christmas. I guess only is he on here? No, he isn't, Andrew. You're wrong.
He's my go-to for Marvel letter. I know there's more, but he letters like 100 books or something a month for them. So I figure he's a safe for my go-to letter bits.
Every time I see his name in a book, I'm like, Andrew's boy. I only know of him because of you. That's not true.
Well, he also writes some Disney books. And he had a Kickstarter years and years ago that I backed and everything. So, yeah, I mean, he does other stuff, but I think he's probably most famous for the lettering. And he was on that Marvel 616 show, the one about Dan Slott and all those guys putting the Iron Man issue together.
What is that 616 thing?
Is it... It's a documentary series. It's very light and fluffy, but I enjoyed it. So each time they focus on a different one. So one time they focused on like cosplayers, another time they focused on the toys, so they talked to people from Hasbro. Another time they looked at putting together an issue of Iron Man 2020 number one with Dan Slott, and it was just interesting because all these people that I follow on Twitter, I don't follow Dan, but the artist, Pete Woods, is on. And at the time he was, I don't know if he still is, was traveling around the country with family in like a big RV and obviously works digital. So it was just interesting to see all the people. I know a lot of people, I guess, had problems with the issue or with the how they put it together and it doesn't really work like that or whatever. But I thought it was, look, it's a TV show. You know, it's meant they don't have a camera crew, but I don't think people were lying about what they contributed. It's just sort of a packaged way of how a comic is put together. But yeah, so all just different. Each episode is a different focus. So one of them, a comedian, was looking at obscure properties and tracked down brute force and talked to the creator and everything. That was anthropomorphic animals. And the joke was he was going to pitch a show to reboot one of those properties like brute force. So just different parts of the Marvel Universe. And toy photography was in the toy one, too.
Yeah, you know, you say that's a joke, but someone was unloading their Brute Force comics that week on eBay. So now they set a new standard for what you can get for Brute Force. Because now they think a series is coming. You didn't mention the Japanese Spider-Man one, though. That was cool. That's the first one.
Yeah, I'm less... I mean, I think it's a fascinating artifact, but I've never... I'm not like a Power Rangers or any of that stuff fan, so it doesn't resonate with me as much. I liked cartoons when I was a kid, but the live action stuff like that, I don't know, I never watched Kamen Rider or any of that stuff, so...
Before the movies were doing everything we wanted, I would always look at Power Rangers and I'm like, everyone's in costumes, live action. I'm like, why don't we have superhero shows like this? I'm like, if they can do it, that was my thinking as a kid.
You must have loved that first Raimi Spider-Man because Green Goblin was right out of Power Rangers.
Oh, no, Andrew, no. Somehow Sandman that was always my problem. Like somehow Sandman can find his shirt, but Green Goblin cannot find his costume. Like, I don't know the logic circuits involved. It just doesn't make any sense. I don't know.
Yeah, but I've been watching all kinds of weird stuff, so I'm up on... I haven't been recent reading, I've been recent watching. I'm reading Distinguished Competition, but I finished Runaways, if anyone's interested. And it's... a lot of the shows have been canceled, so I think they're breaking a clean break here. And I watched, inspired by our segment, I did also watch the first episode of Hellstrom on Hulu.
That's out?
It's out and not renewed for a second season.
Oh, God, because I've heard literally no one talk about it. Like, I didn't even...
Well, they
I've seen more promotion on that weird MODOK series that's coming out rather than Hellstrom.
I saw more promotion on the Inhumans TV show, which I should tell you. But it's not that. It's fine. It's just not very superhero-y. It's more just like a run-of-the-mill horror TV show. Like, they have the supernatural powers, but they don't lean... I mean, he has, like, a scar on his chest, but he doesn't have, like, a chariot pulled by flaming horses or the trident. And so far, his sister's just named Anna. Instead of the full, I mean, you know, it takes the conceit and he's out doing exorcisms and stuff like that. But it's just very, like, you could easily not know this was a comic book based thing without a lot of work. And I think you got to lean into, at least for my interest, but I don't hate, it's not, I know some critics hate it. I think it's fine. It just feels very, there's a million shows like this, isn't there?
Yeah.
So... I don't know that I will. I might finish it. Having it be done is actually sometimes alluring to just finish it, but I never finished Inhumans, so... I mean, I think this is better production value than Inhumans, but... it didn't wow me as much. But yeah, so I'm really... I think I'm caught up on most of the shows waiting for the next round of... I mean, I haven't watched the late one. I wait till they're all out, so I'm not watching WandaVision yet.
Oh,
all that other stuff I keep up on. Once, and it's nice once it's done because you can watch it at your own pace.
See, I like the weekly, week to week. See, that's what, if you just dump a show all at once, sometimes you only get like that one hit. Like people talk about it when it first comes out, and then you hope for like reoccurrences.
I don't with, have
like, WandaVision. Now I'm getting the weekly discussion and everything, which is great.
I can't remember stuff for that long, Kevin. You want me to remember what happened like a week later? I can't barely remember what happened this morning. So that format no longer works for me.
Can we just call you old man underscore rabbit instead then?
Only if I get my, is that universe still around? Yes, it is. It must be. So yeah, I can go there. I live in, I don't know. What happened to California out there? Isn't that Red Skull Land? No, that's the East Coast. You I don't remember the map.
Yeah, I don't know if you got the Venom Trinosaurus or what you got. They were really swinging for the fences with WandaVision. To do that many movies and then to come out with that as, like, your first two episodes, and I'm like, I mean, I just know there was some kids watching that totally bored going, I don't understand. How is this a show? Like, it's amazing. It's amazing. Oh, that's like a big statement. Maybe even a bigger statement than the Guardians of the Galaxy movie. Like, it's a statement. And I would rather that than have some boring, totally boring. Like, someone might say this show is boring, but I mean, like, you have no reaction to it. You're just like, eh. Like, you definitely have a reaction to this show.
No, I like the idea of a show coming out periodically versus a dump all at once, because, I mean, it's hard for me to get on a schedule. I can't binge a show. I don't have time to watch all those episodes at once anyway. So ends up being parsed out for me. But it sounds like, because of how this show is, that there's all this setup and there's just these little things that are off, from what I understand, that are leading to the bigger story. Like, maybe this would have been a better show to have, you know, dumped all at once to avoid the negative chatter, unless that's what they like, because there's really no such thing as bad publicity, right?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to do much harm anyways. So, I mean, if you really wanted to, someone could, I guess you could sort of skip and just read, they have a previously, or whatever. I mean, maybe you're not into television history. You're like Andrew, where you're like, I can't read these Golden Age comics. Like, if you just give me some video on YouTube about what's in this Golden Age comics, I'm cool. Like, maybe you have a hard cutoff point that, like, I don't know, 1993. And once you go back to 1992, then you're just like, I don't understand. I can't watch this. This is garbage. Like, maybe you have one of those things, and then you only want to watch certain episodes of a show.
It's good to have standards. You shouldn't like every comic that's ever written. Good Lord, what's wrong? Anodyne. There are some. I have a few exceptions, but all my Golden Age exceptions are not Marvel comics.
Now, I feel like there's the Golden Age comics that are a novel, and then there's the other ones where you're like, what is this? I don't understand what this is, because they have nothing to base it on.
Read the Bill Everett comics. Those are the good ones.
I like the Wonder Woman and the Popeye.
I like some of the guys from the 12, where he builds a ship and then he's like tunneling through the earth and then he comes up in like Central Park or something. And when everyone comes up in a park, like, one of the most dangerous places to be in a comic book universe is in a park, because the supervillains are going to land their ship there.
Or absolutely. Or they already have, and you like bump into the cloaked ship that's in the middle of the field and running to catch the frisbee.
Yeah, totally. Never go to a park.
Well, the nice thing about those Golden Age comics is someone can just read it to you, because they describe all the action that's happening anyway.
Well,
so.
In certain comics, you might want to just skip the captions. Like, just pretend those aren't even there.
All right, how about a good book? How about, and this was one that Kevin suggested, and soon as he mentioned, I just jumped right on it. It was Quasar, number 17, from the fall of 1990, priced at $1, written by Mark Gruenwald, drawn by Mike Manley. It Reborn to Run.
And while this isn't one of those covers that I say, oh, you must buy this, it's kind of in that realm. Like, it's not one of those definitive, iconic ones, but when you see there's a giant race going on and it says, who will be the fastest one alive? And you see Captain Marvel, the Wizard, Speed Demon, we know that guy, a Super Saver, Black Racer, Quicksilver, Makari.
And did you say the Wizard?
I did.
All right.
You bring extra attention to the Wizard with his yellow costume?
Well, how is the Wizard and Speed Demon? Isn't Speed Demon the Wizard? I mean...
No, I think this is...
He's from...
Another universe Wizard somehow.
What? No, he's from the Squadron Supreme. But yeah. So is Speed Demon. Before he was Speed Demon, he was the Wizard from the Squadron Supreme who... There were two guys who defected. It was the Wizard defected and became Speed Demon, and Nighthawk defected and, you know, joined the Defenders and everything.
I don't know. Because there's some weird Squadron Supreme stuff going on. So, and then they're like, oh, we're going to... Like, it seems like they have some long-term plans with these characters. So I assumed it was something that was going on that where it was a different guy. Because he even has a different... Like, he only has glasses instead of, like, a...
See, there's a whole, it's a whole trap with the Wizard, right? Because the Wizard really was an old Golden Age hero.
Well, that's the thing too, right?
When Roy Thomas was being cute and having the Grandmaster have a JLA analog team to fight the Avengers back in the 60s, they, for the Flash analog of the Squadron Sinister, they used the Wizard name there. But then later they would bring back the Golden Age Wizard, right? And then have it be where, like, he thought he was the Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver's father for a little while, and he was Nuklo's father, right?
Nuklo, that big, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And he married Miss America from the Liberty Legion and everything. So, but they had already established that there was this Wizard from the Squadron Sinister, so they had the Wizard... defect and become a different character, the Speed Demon, which was a good solution, right? So now the Wizard in the 70s and Speed Demon in the late 70s, they're two separate characters. But, you know, then they get messed up when anytime they bring in another version of the Squadron Supreme or Squadron Sinister, which was what happened here, because, I mean, this is a pretty laid-back version of the Squadron Supreme. They're like, hey, yeah, man, you know, just take your time and let us know when you can get us home and everything, and we'll be here, not trying to take over your planet or anything, we promise. But anytime they bring in a new team, they have to have the Wizard, right? And so it's another Wizard, so it's just funny, because... Yeah, they're collecting all the fast guys, so they have Speed Demon, but they didn't... And Gruenwald, he is the purveyor of Marvel continuity, right? Post-Roy Thomas, so he knows all this, and he very carefully doesn't go there at all.
I was impressed. The Black Racer raced all the way from the fourth world in DC Comics.
Oh, he's not the only character that races from the DC Comics.
I got to reread this series. Mark Gruenwald, I loved him as a writer and an editor and a caretaker of Marvel continuity and everything, and those backup stories where he was trying to, like, set up the Marvel cosmology of the universe in, like, What If, when he was doing those, like, Tales of the Marvel Universe things and stuff. Loved all that stuff. And, you know, this series... was just fantastic, and here it was Mike Manley who would leave to go do Darkhawk.
Yeah.
And then Greg Capullo would get a shot at his first book.
That's so crazy. Yeah, I think the first issues of Quasar I read were probably Infinity War tie-ins.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
In this issue, Gruenwald introduces us to another Elder of the Universe, for Thanos to poach the stones from in a few months. And it's this time it's this Golden Runner guy, and he does the classic, you know, Andrew, it's like the champion from that old Marvel 2-in-1 annual with the whole boxing match, gathering all the different guys that he's going to box. He does the same thing, but this time it's a race, because this guy isn't a boxer, he's a racer.
My least favorite of these dudes. I like, bring the planting guy back, like the running guy.
Well, he was created for this story so that he could do a grand race and collect all the racers, because Makari was hanging out with Quasar. Makari is the fast guy from Jack Kirby's Eternals, and he was like living with him and like almost like a little sidekick for a little while. So while you got the fast guy, Gru's like, let's do the fast, ultimate fast guy's story here and have the big cosmic race.
And they mentioned there's like 1,000 like elders, like,
nah,
I
think he's leaving the door open. I think he's justifying the fact that he just created a new one.
Yeah. But then it makes me think now, like, they're still like, oh, well, what if there's a guy of this? And I'm like, oh, he's not, like, one of the original guys. And then I read this, and I'm like, oh, well, it's a thing they've been always doing, apparently.
Starlin streamlined it, though, when the next year he would do the Thanos quest, and he would have Thanos have the revelation that the Soul Stones were Infinity Stones, and each one of the Elders had one. So when he went to collect them, he had to best the Elders. So then he kind of like reduced the number of Elders to the number of Infinity Stones, I think, and kind of tied it that way. And I don't know if anyone's messed with that since.
Yeah, I don't know. It's funny they have a guy just for running, though.
Yeah.
It
makes me wonder what other pointless.
It's like, just for this story.
The eternal champion who wills.
They only made him because they needed a reason to have this story.
But
like with the champion, what was his purpose? He's one of the dumbest characters ever. But how great is that Marvel 2-in-1 annual where how dumb is it to think of a cosmic being that goes around and collects guys and has boxing matches, right?
I can see that so better than doing a race, Steve. Maybe because I'm lazy. But people like to fight. I guess people like to run in just everywhere as a thing
Or you have something where a guy's like, I need to know who's better, so now we're going to fight. And this guy's just like, I need to know who's faster. Like, if you need to just, like, do one story, I'm like, there's your story. You can do your thing and do something funny while you're doing it.
Exactly, because that, the whole idea of it isn't even just to have the race and to create this new elder. All of that is just a function for Gruenwald to totally sweep the rug out from under you when you were reading it and doing what you were hoping would happen all along at the same time. Makari would have won this race if it wasn't for buried alien.
And he totally has like the same getup and everything, and he's just like, I thought I was involved in some kind of big event.
It's so clever. They think that they're going to race this golden racer, Elder, right? They think that's the whole thing. But that wasn't what the golden racer's experiment was at all. That wasn't what the Elder... I mean, that is too primitive for the Elder. Oh, race me. What's the point? He's an Elder of the Universe. He's going to win that race. He already knows that. His experiment was really... Is there anyone in the Marvel Universe as fast as the Flash? Well done.
Fastest man alive.
Well done. And you know, and he's got the Flash little loincloth with the belt and the boots, and he's a blonde, and this is a time when the Flash, the Barry Allen Flash, was dead after Crisis and hadn't been brought back. So he was, you know, gone, and here Marvel Comics was bringing him out of the, you know, Speed Force world and pulling him into this and then sending him back. Very clever. And Gruenwald doing it, who has written essays on how it's fun to think about all the universes as being connected, and I just really, it just was really fun. And so you get that idea. I'm going to do a thing and bring the Flash in, and then how do you do it? And he ends up creating this silly running elder character to as a catalyst. You know, I don't think it came from like, oh, I really, the runner, this would be a great, I mean, it was just a function to be able to do the Flash thing, and it was so good.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's the whole reason there's something about, like, Bizarro back issues or whatever, it's just like, oh, that would be fun to have.
And if we didn't say before, this is on Marvel Unlimited's digital service, so go check out Quasar number 17 and see that time that the Flash raced all of the Marvel Universe speedsters.
And yeah, it makes the backgrounds easier. You just do the little speed lines everywhere.
He's so fast.
He's a cosmic Avenger. Anyhow, I have more King of Reeds here. The Immortal Hulk one was Your Mileage May Vary. Maybe I'll work my way up. I feel like I should work my way up. It's just funny how I just laid down these comics and I put them in perfect order. I was for a second there, I was debating if Guardians of the Galaxy was better than the Immortal Hulk. Your Mileage May Vary. Guardians of the Galaxy, I would say read issue 9. If you can only read, remember on the covers, it says if you only read one Marvel comic this month. Well, if you can only read one Guardians of the Galaxy issue from the first 10 issues, definitely read issue 9 rather than this King in Black issue 10. I mean, that issue 9 goes to some crazy places with Star-Lord. Crazy layouts. Referencing some probably issues that you've read, Super Steve.
Nice.
Because they even have like the same sort of like panel layouts for some of that stuff. Because Star-Lord's been traveling. So when he shows up in this issue, he's just like some bum just wandering around. And then the Guardians are like, wait, it's him. But yeah, they're dealing with... well, you have the fallout of Empire here with all the different galactic leaders. And then they're like, hey, there's this dude that's been trolling through space. Like, I don't know if they regrew their planets or... You have to imagine there's just a lot of debris in space, right? Like the Annihilation Wave went there, knocked out a few thousand planets. The Builders went through there, you know, got rid of some planets. Null's in there, wiping out some stuff. Like, I don't know, maybe there... Someone's got to have invented some device where it just gathers up all the debris, right? Mashes all those pieces together into a new planet and then regreens it. Like, that must be someone's job in, like, one of these galactic empires. Like, if that is not a thing, I want that to be a thing.
Damage control. Intercosmic.
Exactly. That would be great. So yeah, they're going off. Of course, it's not just hitting like all these unknown, who cares worlds, right? This one's after Spartax. So I guess you're gonna evacuate a world. Like, what are you gonna do? Like, this isn't even where the action is. Like, the action's coming to Earth, and you're just some stopover. But luckily, they have Crazy Man Star-Lord. Remember that issue that where Bendis tried to do the I guess revised origin of Star-Lord with his gun and parentage and everything?
Yep.
Like, I feel like the issue 9 of the Guardians is the issue, like, what you wanted that issue to be. Like, that issue is so much more and so much more creative. And so, and like, I put that on higher on way higher on a pedestal rather than that issue. Like, I also feel like this Guardians book is the Guardians book like you wanted after the movie came out and you never got, because the Guardians was in like some weird limbo where they're like, oh, we don't know what to do now. And like, we've been slowly getting there. Like, I found with the Kate stuff, we almost got there. Like, that was pretty good, but still like doing some stuff we've seen before, and now we're I feel like we're in a different place now. Whether you like that place or not is a different story. Yeah, so Star-Lord's back with his crazy universal radiant energy super gun that takes down dragons, which is pretty helpful. I think Null takes notice of that.
Well, this is a good time to have a dragon shooting gun.
Yeah, isn't it? But this is just like a little one-off before they are going to go back to the first issue, I assume. Which I assume will be better than the first issue, because that was the rockiest issue of the run. So when you're wrapping back around to that, I'm like, I'm not really let's do it right this time, but I feel like we've established the credentials of the title and everything. Then also Thunderbolts, of course. How could I not pick up Thunderbolts? I mean, I know Andrew purports to be a Thunderbolts fan.
Not at all. Never heard of it.
But apparently you won't go out of your way to get a Thunderbolts issue.
Yes, I staged the entire COVID business so I could not go to a comic book store for a year and therefore not have to get this Thunderbolts issue. Mission achieved.
That's some long planning there. So this is, I guess you can call these the Kingpin Bolts. I think they were introduced in, I don't know if it's the same lineup. But I think that idea of the Kingpin having his own Thunderbolts was introduced in The Punisher. So Kingpin sets him up with an objective, and he's like trying to form his team together. There's a lot of dudes here. Not all of them survive, which is, I guess, part of the fun. And then some people want to, they're like, oh, I'm not down with it. And then you see them leave the room, you hear a gunshot, and then you ask the members again who wants to be with the team. And then some of the members are way brighter, which is weird, the Rhino being bright. But anyways, he realizes that if he wants to leave his team, you might want to do that when you're actually on the street and the Kingpin's not around, or his men aren't around.
Yeah, the Rhino might not be the brightest, but he certainly has been manipulated and in bad situations enough to know when that's happening again.
Oh, and this is Rosenberg and Ferreira. Yeah, really, really nice, dark, kind of gothic-y artwork, especially on the dragons and the dudes they run into the street. Like, really nice artwork in here. I don't know I've probably seen his work somewhere before. Like, it's somehow, like, I'm not grasping what series. Like, probably not an ongoing run. But anyways, really nice. So you have some new characters. I mean, I don't know how you can guess who dies in this book. You have a lot of known characters and then two new guys. Like, if that's suspicious. I mean, not that everyone's like A-list or something, but Star from her series. I don't know if you guys are into Star or even know who Star is.
From the Captain Marvel offshoot, right?
Yeah, yeah. Although she seems a little more controlled. Like, she's less crazy here. Then you have like a Taskmaster, like Batroc. A lot of fun guys to bring you through the streets with a lot of dragons trying to get to your goal. So I think this, so far, this is a more fitting Thunderbolts book than we've had in recent memory. Because there are moments where it's like, well, why are you doing that? You shouldn't be doing that. Like, I'm going to steal something. It's like, why would you steal something? If the world's going to end, who are you going to sell this to? So not necessarily noble moments, but sort of like moments of conflict. And why would you do that?
Earth is our planet too.
It's true.
Hey, and then it can be a Thunderbolts book without Bad Rock in it.
Well, you got to have Rob Liefeld's creation in there.
I think that would be a good mashup. Bad Rock and Batroc get together. Jumping Rock.
Is there a good Rock? And then to the top of the stack for me would be Venom versus Carnage. Nice. Or should I say M. Yarnage? Yarnage?
Is that with the Ken Lashley cover?
Yeah.
Nice.
It's funny. I would say the cover is the worst part of the book. I mean, not to throw shade at Ken Lashley. I mean, it's just once you get to the interiors. Like, you remember that Heroes for Hire book? You had, I think Flaverina was the backup artist. And now, like, with a regular book, I'm like, I want to see him on more books. Like, pretty much whenever I think of, like, an artist for another book, I'm like, hey, why don't you get that artist? Pretty much all these, like, King and Black tie-ins, I'm like, well, now I want to see that artist on, like, an ongoing series. That's why I said artists are important. Who knew? And then they have Rico Renzi, who did the coloring on the Gwen Stacy book. So this has the whole Earth 65 colors in it, like the pinks and the oranges and all that, that you would come to expect from a Ghost Spider, Spider-Gwen type of book. So I think this is just basically a continuation. It's funny that this turns out to be the best one because they have a little letters page in the back with comments from the writer, McGuire, about how they had a plan. So I'm thinking if this... usually if you had a story from before, like, that works out better than if they're, like, hiring you to do something and you have to make up something from scratch. It's sort of like the pop-out event. Like, if you're popping it out of your ongoing series, your event or your story is likely to be better than you just being editorially mandated to have something. So the letters page pretty much goes into how they're going to have MJ as Carnage. But remember there was that weird thing in the Ultimate Universe where, and people don't always bring this up, like Gwen Stacy was Carnage? Like, I feel like some people have forgotten that. that was some weird stuff.
Yep.
So it's kind of, I mean, in a way, a takeoff of that, but not really, because you have like the null of finding out about Gwen's universe and everything. She's like, well, I can put on the costume in this world, but I can also go to my world, and that doesn't work out so well. And then you get the MJ Carnage. But if you were looking for that in this first issue, like, that's going to be sort of a next issue type of thing. Like, in this one, she's still going to school. Basically a continuation of the previous run. And then you have the creepy jackal. But remember her symbiote thing to give her the powers are not exactly... like, she doesn't have a real, like, venom type of thing. So it kind of reacts funny to this event. It's more like a synthetic, like, symbiote, which is kind of funny.
Yeah, and will the symbiotes from other dimensions work right here? And
we're gonna get the Aunt May one going too, Steve.
Yeah.
What?
By the time this King in Black event is over. Until Aunt May make mine marble.
Until Aunt May becomes a Herald of Galactus.
No. The Golden Twinkie, or whatever she was. The Golden Oldie.
I would almost call this issue Afterlife with Gwen. This is just good stuff.
Looking forward to checking
point,
it out.
Well, at this point, hasn't the new Gwen Stacy been a longer mainstay than the original Gwen Stacy was? Must be getting pretty close to her surpassing the original.
Not yet. The original was, what was that, like 10 years at least? Probably.
She's I believe post Ditko.
Yeah.
When he goes to college. That's
like, that's like, what, 100 issues maybe? Or close to it.
How long has this Gwen Stacy been around? When did this all... This kicked off like a decade ago, right?
I don't think it's a decade yet. This is where you start screaming at the iPod or your digital device and going, here they are, they don't know time again.
It was 90, her first appearance is Amazing Spider-Man 31, and she dies in the 121-122 arc. So, yeah, about 90 issues.
No, isn't Spider-Verse like 2014 or something? Yeah, Spider-Verse is 2014, wow.
So that's going on 7 years, and the original Gwen was alive for 90 divided by 12, about 7 years too.
Wow, but do you count the Gwen clone?
She's still walking around Europe somewhere, living her life.
I mean, they went pretty quickly to the clone, but then she shows, then she disappears for like years, and maybe only shows up in what, the Evolutionary War or something.
We're gonna say that's the second Gwen Stacy. So.
There was a warehouse
the record
full of them.
For the longest of from, you know, the early 70s up until the 2014 or whatever. But yeah, I just like it when moments happen, when, you know, like Flash Thompson was no longer the bully and suddenly he was a good guy for longer. And well, some of them flip-flop like Sandman back and forth and everything. I just think it's always funny when that character has long since passed. It's past what's happened. Like Peter and Mary Jane's marriage.
What?
Oh, spoiler. They used to be married.
Yeah, I think I read some Marvel article where Peter Parker made a deal with the devil.
So it just,
I don't know why they got all those people to write those articles incorrectly, but you know, it is what it is, I guess. They added their website quite a bit back in the day.
Always fine.
I mean,
those
they must have been checking the message boards. People getting upset, and then they're like, oh, we got to change the wording on this article.
All right, let's do that Bronze Age binge that I promised.
All right.
The Marvel Unlimited app has this handy little tab where you can click the little question mark and get a random book, and then click it again and click it again. And I clicked it a few times until I found a book popped up that I hadn't read. And it really intrigued me because it was Captain Marvel, the first Captain Marvel, number 50, from the spring of 1977, a 30-cent comic. And I never read this one.
I was reading this one, and I kept on wanting to virtually flip back and go, did I download the wrong comic? Because Iron Man's gone off for like pages, and I'm like, you don't get a lot of Captain Marvel in this comic.
Written by Scott Edelman, with art by Alan Milgram and Terry Austin. And Austin looks great over Milgram, I gotta say. Who doesn't he look
funny?
Great
we
over?
Did the Cosmic Avenger, and now we're doing Marvel's Spaceborne Superhero.
They open the book with, I mean, they're talking, I mean, the basic plot is that the Super Adaptoid returns from the dead and attacks the Avengers at their mansion, and Captain Marvel helps them out. It opens, though, with this great scene where they're talking about how Stark Enterprises and Iron Man has turned their mission from weapons of war to, you know, in support of a peaceful world, yet we see this giant tank that's like adorned with spikes, withstanding a barrage of missiles. It's like a total battle zone. And Iron Man's driving the tank.
There are also a couple of signature Gil Kane style up no shots here that I love so much. I always think of the '70s when I think of that stuff. But I'm a fiend for our star villain, the Super Adaptoid.
Me too.
That's my jam. One of the early comics I remember reading. I'm sure everyone has this collector's item. It was Marvel Triple Action number 37.
Ditto.
Which was just a reprint of Avengers 45. But as a little kid, I didn't have any understanding. Like, the Super Adaptoid there, he's not doing Iron Man primarily. He's got Cap primarily with, like, Hawkeye's head and the bows and and he's giant. And if you're a little kid, I think that design is great. The Amalgam Hero.
Yeah.
Not the Amalgam line of heroes, but, like, you know, whoever it is that... Amazo or whatever character these ones mimic that take on their powers. And just as a kid, I love that. Visually, it was like, whoa, it's all the heroes in one fighting each other. And yeah, so every time I see him, I'm all geeked out because I'm like 5 years old again going like, whoa.
Because of that same experience, Andrew, like this Adaptoid version, like it took me a while to warm up to him because he's got a shell head instead of like the Hawkeye head, right? Yeah. Like he's not the same without the Hawkeye, you know, head.
He's like the evil Iron Man.
Oh, and despite...
And I always compare it against that Thunderbolts appearance when he started taking their villainous identities instead of their heroic ones, and they're like, oh no. Like, it's hard to live up to that, too.
And I don't remember him. I mean, he's got no mouth that I can see, but he is super talkative here. He's like, I don't know. He's got a lot to say, a lot to complain about, but he does tell us how he came back. We thought he was dead, but no, he turned into goo, which was a very adaptive of him, and then escaped like the Venom symbiote through a crack in Reed Richards' lab.
Yeah, well, he was in that airtight container too long, and now he has lots to say.
Yeah, I don't want to knock the footnote system, but I strongly suggest you start with Iron Man number 49. Like, that's like where he's fighting the Adaptoid. Back then, he hadn't gotten promoted yet. So it's funny. There lurks the Adaptoid. I don't know when he got the promotion to Super Adaptoid.
When he fought the Avengers. when he upped the game.
But in that version, he's like we remember Steve with the Cap body, the Hawkeye head, and like the bow and arrow and the shield.
Yeah.
And the Buccaneer boots and all that. And it's,
This was an action figure of him in that version of him would be awesome.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, you're right. But the problem is it would have to be a Build-A-Figure because you got to have him oversized.
Sure.
Because of the Goliath absorption. But yeah, that's the real fun one is 49 where they actually mix it up and then the rest after that it becomes more about the, you know, then we're heading to issue 50 Princess Python and it's much more of a side plot. But yeah,
but
49, it's also on Unlimited, so you can check it out.
Believe it or not though, it's not an issue of Iron Man here, it's Mar-Vell. So we've got to, well, he's got to tidy up things from, you know, like the loose ends from the last issue.
This is which, so weird.
It's so funny because it's the
what is happening? I mean,
you can't turn Ronan into a cow and make him forget that he was who he was and leave him on the farm like the Fantastic Four did to the Skrulls. So this simplified mind wiped Ronan is like sitting on like Ma and Pa's porch. In overalls.
The overalls are the perfect touch for this. He's like, it's what the Beverly it? Hillbillies. Someone has a pitchfork and...
Oh, too funny. So this is at the time when Marvel and Rick Jones switched places from the negative zone by clanking the nega bands together, you know? And so there's a whole thing of Rick having to get to a con on time and Marvel gets there and clanks his wrists together just in time so Rick can perform. And in the audience, did you see there's Harry Osborn and Liz Allen? And sitting
Go ahead.
Sitting right by them is Danny Rand and Misty Knight.
Yeah.
I had to Google the Chang and Aang reference. I don't know who that is. For those of you that don't, they're famous Siamese twins that died like 60 years ago or something.
And
yeah, some of the references not the most topical.
And Jarvis is in the audience too, the hirsute Avengers butler. And he visits Rick after the show and invites him back to Avengers Mansion for some hot cocoa. I kid you not.
You know, we're dangerously close to the era where they would have released this song on some kind of novelty flexi disc you could buy for $1 or
right,
something.
Right. In next month's Marvel Age or whatever. So, armed with only Iron Man's powers to begin with, the Adaptoid attacks Avengers Mansion. And first it's the Vision and Scarlet Witch, and then he takes their powers, adds them to his own, even, and some of their appearance too, which helps his look. He's
yes,
adding to himself, you know, but
yeah,
he can mimic the Scarlet Witch's powers, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
He can do it all.
It looks painful what he does with the Beast. It's like pulling... It looks like he's pulling on his skin like it's fabric.
That's how Beast's mom used to pick him up. Scruff of the back of the neck. It works fine.
It's like pulling at a department store Santa's beard or something and have him be like, yeah, no, that's a real one.
Don't do that.
So he takes out Cap and the Beast with a fastball special with a unwilling participants. Then Rick sees what's going on and changes into Mar-Vell, and so he's on the scene to help and everything. And by now, the Adaptoid has like furry beast legs. It's a great look. I love that panel. But Mar-Vell figures the Adaptoid out, and despite the protests of the Avengers, he gets, you know, too close and allows the Adaptoid to copy his powers. And this is great. The cosmic awareness of Mar-Vell gives the Adaptoid like an intoxicating head rush. His eyeballs look like, you know, like the Freak Brothers just got turned on or something like that. He's like, whoa. And in that moment of distraction, Mar-Vell claps the Adaptoid's wrists together, and that sends him to the negative zone and brings back Rick Jones, finally solving the problem of them switching back and forth from the negative zone. And now Rick and Mar-Vell are in the same place at the same time. How cool is that? That's pretty important.
My mind kind of went through that a few times, going, he made a facsimile and it still works like the original, and then I'm thinking, I wonder if they would have known that before, if they would have, and then I'm like, it's fine.
Yeah, he always, because that's how he gets Iron Man's suit of armor and the bow and shield and stuff. Yeah, I mean, I assume they're never quite as powerful.
Yeah,
but he, that's the whole absorption and distribution thing. Yeah,
I'd love to read ongoing stories of, like, the Super Adaptoid's adventures in the negative zone. That would be awesome.
Yeah, that would have been weird. Maybe he's just drifting for a while. Gets picked up.
He seems
kind of
angry, too. Like, I kind of wish he was not quite as angry. But, yeah, anyways, if you go back, the problem with going back to Iron Man 51 is the Super Adaptoid had been mutated into this weird cyborg character that looks like a... He's like a robotic skeleton with white hair and a big axe. He looks like kind of like the Terminator with a white freight wig on. And what happened with these? It's a long story, but that's how he gets to that form. And it was just weird because when I first read it, I was like, "That's not the Super Adaptoid." So then you go back to 49 and 50. 49 is the big punch up, and then 50, you see how he gets transformed. So they can have the adventures in 51.
And the other notable thing about this issue is Dr. Minerva is induced, and she's on Mar-Vell's trail. This made me want to read the other, like, I had read and reread the Starlin related issues of Captain Marvel, But after Starlin left, I only had a few of the Milgram-drawn issues that I had picked up off the stands as a youth, maybe five or six issues here or there. It would be fun to go back and read. I mean, if the art is good, I mean, if Terry Austin and folks like that from the, you know, Milgram, Starlin, Alan Weiss, Terry Austin, bunch of Catskill guys were involved in the book, I've got to go back and check out these adventures.
Yeah, I think Drax and some other familiar characters show up. I don't know who the 4D man is, though.
Find out. Well, next issue.
Well, with those power absorbing guys, remember the key is never to overload them.
Sounds like a classic ending to a Star Trek episode.
Has that ever worked with the Adaptoid? You can't beat him like that, can you?
No, he's too good. He's too good, Steve. He's the best. He should have his
own. He would adapt to that attack.
He should have his own series now.
Whoa. Well, if Awesome Andy can have a book.
I would like to see.
At one point, I would have read an Awesome Andy book.
Marvel didn't sprinkle their heroes with as much as the competition did, but I would like to see him absorb someone who has, like, some ridiculous weakness. I always like that trick, too.
What about the... You read that Daredevil... Maybe not. You didn't read that Daredevil story where the absorbing man absorbs, like, the wrong thing when he's facing Daredevil when the heroes are in the Heroes Reborn universe?
Oh, no. I've absorbed confetti.
I think he absorbs a diamond or something, and he's like, this is the best ever. And then Daredevil's like, yeah, there's imperfections in a diamond.
And I just happen to have Karnak next to me. In humans exactly. To find your imperfection and hit it with a perfect chop.
Always loved the absorbing man, but no one ever made him as ugly as Kirby.
Yeah.
Which is the real key to that guy.
Yeah, Gene Colan made him pretty ugly too, I gotta say. But you're right. Well, that's it for this episode's foray into the realm of the House of Ideas. Thanks to Kevin and Andrew, as always. They'll be back to join me next episode when we'll relive some Tales of Suspense, Captain America, Iron Man, Split Book Tales. Until the Moloids live topside, make mine Marvel. Later.